Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus. Today, we continue our series on mythic physique and our quest for the Golden Fleece with Ryan Foley's Furion Strength. And he has quite a program prepared for us today. Greetings and welcome. How are you, Ryan?
Hercules, it has been a fairly interesting month. How have you been?
It seems so from your description. Wow. Interesting, too. We had flooding with Ida, knee-deep in water in our basement, and it looked like our house was in the middle of a lake when you stood out on the porch. So.
Well, I mean, I'm sorry to hear that you had to go through all that. I hope everything got all cleaned up and everything is getting back to normal.
We're getting there, but it was quite an adventure. It sounds like you've had quite an adventure as well.
Yes, it's kind of one of those things where I'm thankful for everything to fall into place properly the way it needed to. For the first time ever in my 46 years, I had to have surgery performed last week to go through, and I will spare everyone the gruesome details, but basically I had what's called a sebaceous cyst. It's where one of the oil that your skin produces in order to keep you safe and healthy, sometimes those ducts can get clogged. And so as a result, it forms a mass that needed to be removed from my neck and had to be done surgically. But it was an outpatient procedure. I was awake the whole time. I had had it scheduled to come in and have a doctor look at it to do a consultation. He took one look at it and said, yeah, let's go ahead and get that thing out. And so they had me in the next day, because in the time since I had been given the recommendation and until I could get in to see the doctor, it had gotten inflamed and had become very angry with me. So they took one look at it and said, yeah, okay, we're going to go ahead and get that out of there. So thankfully it was over within about 30 minutes. There were no complications. And so now I have sutures in my neck that won't be removed until Monday of next week. So I went through and decided, well, it's probably time to go through and take a little bit of time off just to be safe, just to be careful. And I kind of start to understand the frustrations that professional athletes go through, where, you know, they want to get back out there, and sometimes they need professionals. They need those coaches and those training staffs. I noticed that when I was watching this season with Hard Knocks on HBO, where there was their quarterback wanted to come back in and wanted to throw, and they knew that, hey, we're going to have to rein him in and only let him throw a certain amount. Otherwise, we're afraid that he's going to go through and injure himself. He won't come back as quickly. So they really went through and started policing him as far as what all he could do in the workouts. And I felt like it was better for me to err on the side of caution and take a little bit of time off, just so that way everything would be fine. And as I slowly started to integrate myself back into the gym, that's where I realized there were certain exercises that were you just should not do, and especially when it comes to lifting heavy, because for me there's a certain amount of grimacing that happens. There's a certain amount of strain that happens, you know, in the neck area whenever you're trying to go through and lift those heavy amounts of weights, and I could feel just those little tingles. And the last thing that I wanted to do was to go through and pop a suture or something like that. And so it reminded me a lot of whenever things started to fall apart back in 2020. And so the gyms all went through and shut down, and then they slowly got reopened. And so, you know, you had to go through and you had to weigh your options as far as how important that gym work is to you, because you are exposing yourself, you know, potentially to a biohazard by going into a gym, and, you know, by having an open wound, even though I had it covered and, you know, doing everything that I can in order to protect myself. You have to go through and you have to make those decisions. But what this has done, you know, sometimes I do think you have to take a step back in order to truly appreciate, you know, so that's when you know that you really love it, is whenever you can't wait to get back to it. So now I've been slowly reintegrating myself back into the gym. It is amazing to me how quickly things can kind of slide backwards if you're not careful. And I'm hoping Schwarzenegger has said on, you know, like every time that he wanted to get back into that original Terminator shape for each one of the sequels that he did for the Terminator movie series. And he says, you know, the body remembers, you know, so it's not going to be as hard to climb up the mountain a third or fourth or fifth time as it is to climb up that first time. So I'm hoping that the rebound will be quick. But it was just one of those things where I kind of had to weigh the options of, you know, which is best for me. But I knew I was getting to that point where it's like, okay, I have to get back in here. I have to, you know, start working out again so that way I can start chasing that endorphin rush that I love so much.
I know what you're talking about. I had to take some time off because of Ida and all the stuff we need to do. So it's been a few weeks now. I'm itching to start exercising again, but I know that this time off is very well spent, and I'm actually feeling a lot more myself too with the time off.
Good, good. And, you know, so, and this was one of the things that I wanted to bring up with you, because I was really curious to get your take on it so that way I can get your perspective from it as well. So it was a few months ago we talked about how I was doing a charity walk to support domestic abuse survivors. And I found that as I was going through that, it gave me motivation to keep going. It gave me motivation to push myself a little bit harder and walk just a little bit farther than I probably wouldn't have if I didn't have that motivation. You know, because when you're doing it for someone else, you find yourself able to reach down into reserves that maybe you didn't think that you had before. And So we've also talked in the past about how, so what we've got here is we've got two different schools of thought, and I can argue on both sides of them. So that's why I'm curious to get your opinion. But so one of the things that we've talked about and we both agree on is the fact that this fitness journey that we're on, you're constantly learning new things. You're constantly learning to improve. I've been doing this for 7 years, and I still don't have it all figured out. A lot of it is trial and error. A lot of it is seeing what other people have done and liking what they're doing. So it's like, okay, I'm going to incorporate that idea into my workout. And this is where you need to have a certain level of gym IQ, so that way you can go through and decide, you know, which is best for you. And so in going through and doing this, what I've said, this is a lifelong pursuit for me. This is something that I'm going to do for forever.
Right.
And so that's one of the drawbacks that we see with diets. And it's part of the reason why diets fail is because a diet has to be something that is sustainable. If you go through and you say, okay, I'm going to be on this juice cleanse and all I get to eat is paper, but I can eat as much paper as I want, you know, that's not a sustainable diet for you to be on. So that's where you're going to see the crash. So maybe it's effective a little bit in the beginning, but then you're going to fall off of it. And more than likely, you're probably going to gain back all the weight that you lost and probably even gain a little bit more. So instead, it's more about finding something that is sustainable that you can do for a long period of time. I would say probably for the last, 2 months now, I've been doing nothing but salads, for my lunch up at work. And so it's something I don't mind doing it. It's, I've actually, you know, grown to really enjoy them. And now that's just, you know, part of my routine. So one of the other things that I look at is, so this is this lifelong quest that we're going to go on. So at the same time, I don't have so we've talked about in the past about how I am extremely inspired by actors in Hollywood, the people that are in the MCU, the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And then I'm also a big fan of professional wrestling, and I like the physiques that those athletes have. But in doing this, it can often set up an unrealistic expectation And so they've talked about in the past about how, and the news is kind of starting, the training techniques that they are using are kind of starting to spill out. And some of the stuff that these actors are doing are not tremendously healthy.
Right.
So like, for instance, they know to the day, all right, this is the day where I have to take my shirt off for this particular scene. So they'll go through and like the 2 days before, they'll be consuming just this massive amounts of water. You know, sometimes it's up to as much as 2 gallons per, you know, day. And as you're doing that, the effect that has to your body is, quite frankly, you just start peeing a lot because you're taking in all this extra water. And so they know about 18 to 24 hours before they know they're going to do this shoot where they're going to have to take their shirt off, then they cut off all liquid entirely. But it takes your body time to figure out that you've cut off all that water. So as a result, you just keep peeing and peeing and peeing, even though you're not taking in any more water. So as a result, you get dehydrated. But by going through and doing that, you're going through and the skin gets, you know, very thin and the muscles become more pronounced. But they know, okay, so it's a day of pain here, but it's going to last for a lifetime on the screen.
Right.
But if you were to go and meet, you know, Chris Hemsworth, you know, in person, or if you were to see Gerard Butler today, he probably, you know, if you take off your shirt, Gerard Butler, he's not going to look like the same way that he did as Leonidas in 300. Because
right.
So they know, okay, so here comes the shooting schedule and, you know, those trainers get a hold of them and they've got 12 weeks to get them into the shape that they're supposed to get into. And then, so they go through and they're working towards that date. While I know it's not a sword and sandal type story, I heard the guy, Channing Tatum, who did those Magic Mike movies, he talked about how he trained for months, you know, just to get to that one scene or, you know, in one of those movies. You know, so it's like you're working towards this window, and then as soon as the scene is shot, that's it. It's done. And then you can go back to relaxing. And that's where, you know, Robert Downey Jr. talked about how after he got done with certain scenes in Iron Man, then he was like, that's it. Give me the pasta. You know, I don't care if I look puffy. I'm, you know, I want to eat. I want to eat real food. So a long winding road here to a point that what I'm trying to get to is, so what I'm trying to find that balance where, when I was doing that charity walk, I had focus, I had drive, I had something that I was driving towards because I wanted to get those 40 miles in within this certain window. But then I'm also dealing with this, I want this to be a lifelong pursuit. So I'm trying to figure out what is the best way for me to develop the short-term goals and then also having these long-term overarching goals. Because I feel like when I don't develop those short-term goals properly, I don't put in as much of an intense an effort as I would if I, you know, I'm sure my workouts would be extremely different if I knew, okay, in 6 weeks, you've got to go walk out in a little pair of shorty shorts, you know, all done up in oil for people with cameras. I'd be like, oh, I'd be working out like crazy. Yeah, if I knew that I had a competition in me, but that's not really what I'm designing my workouts to be. So I'm just curious if you have come across a scenario like this in your life, and if so, how did you strike that balance between your short-term goals and your long-term goals?
I had one thing a few years ago when we first moved back to New Jersey. I was cast as Samson in a play called Harlots and Heresy. And it was kind of like the Bible and other Near Eastern literature from the perspective of the women rather than the men.
Oh, okay.
So I was giving a speech at a local library, and after I finished my workshop, I was approached by someone in the audience and asked if I'd like to be Samson. So it's like, sure, you know, I'm Hercules. I've been Thor. I've been a barbarian. Why not, you know, Samson too? But I knew that the way I am usually wasn't enough to be Samson on a stage. So it was at the Nyack Village Theater. So I changed everything I did and pushed myself, you know, because I knew that the play would last for a very short period of time and I needed to look, you know, phenomenally muscular during that time. So every moment I had to devote to it, I devoted to it. I changed my diet around and did everything I could. And I think I pulled it off. Most people who've seen the play or saw pictures from it thought I pulled it off. So then I went back to doing things as I normally do them. And I'm still a big guy, but not as big as I was when I played Samson.
And so how do you deal with the I don't want to use the – it's. I hate for this to sound the wrong way, but how do you deal with the negative ramifications mentally to know, you know, hey, where that level – is just not sustainable and for it to be healthy. I mean, unless you're going to go through and you do have, you know, all the professional coaches, you have the, you know, people making meals for you, stuff like that. I mean, unless you're sponsored to go through and do this, did you experience any sort of, I guess for lack of a better term, a bit of a psychological crash because, you know, it's like, oh, I was this, and now I'm this, okay? I mean, how did you have a negative effect from that transition?
Not so much because, as you pointed out many times on your show, including today, that basically there's a lot of smoke and mirrors involved in the pictures of bodybuilders that we get. And there are a lot of tricks and techniques that people use to look a particular way. I knew that earlier from you know, going to the gym with a lot of bodybuilders, that there was certain lighting that showed off their muscles, that oil showed off their muscles, and that they did all sorts of things with carbo loading after carbo depriving. And I knew that a lot of folks who did the posing and looked fantastic for magazines, they were not very healthy when they were doing that, and they really couldn't move around between their theatrics, you know, that either they were freezing cold or that they, you know, were physically sick or physically weak. So I just remind myself of that. It's like why I stopped doing certain exercises like heavy squats and deadlifts. At this point in my life, I could only injure, you know, myself if I push myself in certain directions.
Right.
So, you know, my general body type that I strive for is the same as yours. You know, the type that the sword and sandal people had, some bodybuilders have, and like a professional wrestler, some of them have. And although I wouldn't say I've attained that 100%, I'm enough there where people will make gym jokes or things like that if they see me and they don't know me. So I leave myself at this point, I'm in my 60s, so I leave myself content with that. And if I have to do, like if we start filming movies again, which is something I'd love to start doing, then for those movies, I'm going to have to look my best. Because again, it's immortalized.
Well, so the takeaway, so as you were explaining all this to me, I would say that, you know, there's a very small percentage of people that go to the gym with the intent of being in competition shape. You know, most people are there really, they're wanting to maintain or, you know, so there's very few people that are there with such a rigorous devotion. To me, it's kind of like, you know, out of everyone that plays golf, there's a very small percentage that actually shoot, you know, anywhere close to, you know, par. And mm-hmm. So most people are just out there to relax. It's their way. It's a recreational thing for them. And I think that's probably how a lot of people approach it. And this is where I go back to the Playboy photo shoots or even the, you know, the covers that they do for Cosmo. And I can see how women can be discouraged whenever they see those body types that are presented in those magazines and But now there's starting to be this dramatic pushback as far as, you know, the techniques that they use to go through and not necessarily manipulate the image, you know, where they're putting someone's head on someone else's body, not talking about something like that. But I just, you know, I have to remind myself that these are professional photographers with professional lighting.
Right.
And these models are wearing custom clothes that have been perfectly sized, you know, for them, and everything's all set up to be absolutely perfect. And then it's handed over to digital artists that are going to go through and color correct it and, you know, do all these little techniques to make all the colors pop and stuff like that. And so, yeah, so your selfie's not going to look quite as good, you know, as a professional model getting, you know, their picture professionally taken. So in hearing with your experiences of seeing, you know, more of these competition bodybuilders, yeah, it would be interesting because, I mean, I see them on, like, the websites that they have, bodybuilding.com, you know, and, oh, we're going to have an article, and, you know, so here's this image that we're going to put in the header, and you see a guy, and he's sitting on a bench, and he's eating a salad, you know, or something like that for their article
right.
about, you know, nutrition. But you don't know what all went into that and how much he was working out, you know, before the photo shoot. And so I think that's where we kind of start to fall in a little bit into that self-esteem trap. It's that those pitfalls that we have to somehow find a way to avoid. But also one of the other things that that I put in, so I was very lucky that because of the way the laws changed, I'm not certain if laws are the right term, but so anyway, this was the first time that I have had, this is the first year where I've had legit health insurance that didn't have a massive, massive deductible. And I'm extremely thankful for that because without the surgery that I would have had to have gone to would have cost me a significant amount of money. But thankfully, right. my deductible was reasonable. So I was able to get that taken care of. So I go to the doctor for the first time, and this is back in June. So I don't know how much those doctors, because I know I've talked about this in the past, but I think it bears repeating. Because I looked at, you know, the information that they had listed on my chart. And then, so they go through and they say, okay, he's this height and he's this weight. And so that gives him this BMI. And so as a result, technically he's obese. And so, but I threw about that information out just simply because I went through and started plugging in numbers. And according to the chart, the BMI chart, The Rock is obese, and John Cena would be considered obese because I don't
right.
think they're going through and taking in the amount of muscle mass. So I don't know what my chart looks like. I mean, whenever the doctor is going through and he's typing all the stuff up as he's giving me my examination, but he was able to tell, okay, yeah, obviously he, you know, I lift weights. And, you know, so I just talked a little bit about my program, and he said the reason why he wanted to see me lose weight is for my knees. Because for every pound that you lose, it takes 4 pounds of pressure off of your knees. And so he said, so if you don't want to have knee surgery in the future, we need to find a way, you know, to get your weight down. But he said he wanted me, ideally he wanted me to be around 215. And he said, but that even might be a little bit too skinny for you because, you know, I want to go through and maintain all my muscle mass. But in doing that, one of the things that he asked me, and I mentioned this because you had mentioned about, you know, growing older and not doing, you know, the heavier lifts, not doing the squats, not doing the deadlifts. That was one of the questions that he asked me, you know, where he gave me kind of that little bit of that three-quarter side eye. And he was like, you don't mm-hmm. do those deadlifts, do you? And I didn't want to tell him, yeah, I do. But for whatever reason, I mean, it was just kind of one of those things. Hey, I'm really glad that you're exercising. I'm glad you're working out. But you're not doing those deadlifts, are you? And I don't do a lot of them, but there were a time where I was doing some pretty, you know, heavy deadlifts. And so is there a reason that you know of why a doctor would be discouraging people from doing deadlifts?
You know, that's the question I wrestle with all the time. I'll give you an example from my recent life. I have diabetes type 2. So, the blood sugar went up again, and I didn't figure out like what changes I needed to make. It stayed there for a little while and affected that number that they check. I did what I do all the time. I go back to the drawing board and try different things to see what works and so forth. But my doctor felt that I wasn't getting enough carbohydrate. And so she suggested that I eat some like rice, you know, brown rice and things like that. So I knew from every time I had done that, that my blood sugar goes up. You know, even the smallest amount of rice it will drive up my blood sugar. But because the doctor was so adamant, I tried it. And predictably, my blood sugar went up. And I remember in days when I was heavier than I am now, and the doctors wanted me to, you know, lose the weight. I used to get the same questions because of the weights. Oh, you're not doing the deadlifts, not doing those squats, are you? Some of it, and again, I'm not a doctor, so I really can't tell you how much of it, but some of it is the education they got when they were in school that said certain things about, you know, weightlifting should and shouldn't and dietary shoulds and shouldn'ts, I'm guessing, because you know, I'll listen to what a doctor has to say and I'll heed it, but sometimes the information is very bad. I remember when I first got diagnosed with diabetes, the regular diabetic diet wasn't doing it, so I started experimenting with other ways. And at that time, I experimented with the high protein, moderate fat, low carb diet, and that worked.
Right.
It not only got my weight manageable and my blood sugar manageable, but it also got my harmful lipid level down. So they asked me what I did to get the numbers down, and I said I ate lots of meat with fat in it. And there was a truth, you know, I wasn't trying to be flippant. But I really don't know, and it makes it difficult when you're trying to improve yourself that there are experts with similar credentials holding totally opposing points of view and having totally different suggestions, and all things being equal, looking at it from the outside, they're all equally qualified to express the opinions that they're expressing, even though the opinions don't agree on very much. So I really don't know how to answer that. I haven't been able to figure that out.
The only thing that I can think of is that, you know, deadlift, because people will sing the praises of both the deadlift and of things like a barbell squat, because again, you're talking about compound exercises. You're talking about recruiting a massive amount of muscle fibers, you know, of all the way, you know, so if you think about, you know, your hips are moving, your knees are moving, your ankles are moving. And every time that you're doing one of those compound exercises, you're recruiting more muscle fibers, and that's why you're able to lift more weight. It's simply the difference between an isolation exercise where there's just a single joint moving, whereas with with a deadlift, you have so much more that's moving in that direction. So, I mean, you're working everything, including, you know, your grip and your forearms, all the muscles in your legs, the muscles in your lower back. So because you're lifting so much weight, I can see where possibly hernias could become an issue. And then the barbell squat is the one exercise that I do feel, if not done correctly, you can seriously injure yourself. And so I can understand why someone who is a novice coming in, maybe doesn't have a whole lot of experience in training, I can see where that could be an issue that the doctors would want to steer them away from. But one of the things that we've really tried to push here, and all the times that I come in here and to talk to you, is about going through and improving that gym IQ. And we do understand how important these compound lifts are. And so, and one of the other things, and I'll point this out, because I was talking with my son about his routine that he's going through, and he works out at a different gym than me because he's connected with a, I don't know if I'm allowed to say it, with a very popular search engine. He's connected with a company that works for a very popular search engine. And so we work out at different gyms because one's provided for him and then I have mine. But I was talking about superset training, which that's on my list of stuff for us to get to. And so we were discussing the superset training and the way that I have mine set up. And unfortunately, he is not able to develop this superset, you know, program because everything is so crowded at his gym. And in order to do these supersets properly, you kind of have to take control of two different stations. And he doesn't want to be that guy, you know, that's monopolizing too much of the equipment. So we're trying to find ways around it. But so you're going through and you're developing all these different techniques so you can understand, so that, I mean, if you only know how to work your chest by doing a bench press, eventually you're going to get to a point where all the bench press stations are taken up by other people. So you have to be able to pivot to go and do something else. And so there was a friend of mine that went through and he was asking me about working out, and he was for your listeners, and just to throw this out there as a quick clarification, everything that I'm bringing to your listeners is all stuff that I have learned by learning it myself through trial and error. And so what works for me may not work for other people. I'm not a doctor. I'm just someone that's been doing it for 7+ years. And so my friend had back issues in the past. And so that's kind of one of the things where it's easier for me to go through and design a program for someone that's healthy, but I don't really have the amount of knowledge necessary to work someone around an injury. And so in going through and talking about, you know, the problems that he was having with his back, that was one of the things that we shifted to. I was like, well, what about the idea of doing a landmine squat? So a landmine, there are certain devices that they make, and thankfully they have one at my gym, but it's as simple as going through and taking the barbell and you put it in the corner. You put one end in the corner, preferably up against a towel so you're not damaging the walls. And then you go through and you do the squat. But so this way you're holding the weight in front of you. And so you're just going through and you're dropping down to do that squatting motion. And because that weight is held out in front of you, it is impossible for you to roll your shoulders forward, typically where people will go through and injure their back through that. So by switching up and going to a landmine position, it's safer, it's easier to use. And then I think that's kind of one of those things where if you can go through and you can master that landmine position, then you're starting to get your form down. It's not as difficult. And so then whenever you go to shift and put that barbell, you know, across your shoulders, then you're going to be much more, you're going to have that muscle memory is going to kind of kick in. Oh yeah, we've done this landmine style. So we'll be strong enough to be able to do it from a regular position. And so I understand what you're talking about as far as the doctors go. I'm sure they want to protect you. But that was kind of one of those things whenever he asked me, you don't do those deadlifts, do you? And I just kind of – I played it off like, not you know, too heavy or anything like that. But you were one of the first people that I thought to. I was like, you know, I'm going to ask him because I'm going to ask Hercules because he'll know why the doctor would be so hesitant about me doing that. But I think so probably at the end of the day, it probably just comes down to where that's where they've seen a lot of the big major injuries. And so they're trying to keep people from doing that. Yeah.
I still do deadlifts and squats, but with dumbbells and with lighter weights, because it does promote all the growth and it does recruit a lot of muscle and make you stronger. I I'm not at a point now where I'm competing with anybody or want to impress anybody. It's just I love exercising. And even though this break is a long one compared to the other much shorter breaks I've taken, I'm using this to recuperate so that I can't wait to get back to working out every day like I was before. I'm tied into it like you're tied into it. I know you feel like you're missing out on something or you did something wrong if you're not working out.
And it's a thing where I'm at a point right now where I was on, whenever I went to the doctor in June, you know, my weight had kind of gotten a little bit heavier than I would have liked. And so I was on a really nice pace where I had lost, you know, a considerable amount of weight. And now, even though I was just taking a little bit of this time off, I'm almost a little bit frightened to step on the scale again, just because it's like, well, you know, if I don't know, I don't know. So let's just go ahead. Let's put in the work, and maybe down the line it won't be as bad as I thought it was. But so in going through, I'm excited to get back into it. I've got the muscle soreness today to show how excited that I've been. And so one of the things that we talk about regularly is trying to find that ultimate workout for you. But then even if you go through and you find that ultimate workout, eventually you're going to run up against the law of diminishing returns. So you have to go through and find different exercises to go through and shock those muscles into doing different things so that way you can continue to grow. So I'm kind of one of those people, I love talking about this, but at the same time, I'm not going to force my ideas on other people. I do love the fact that you let me come on here and talk about something that I love so much. But so, but I'm not one to go through and you know, throw my ideas at people. But every once in a while, I do have people that come to me, and they go through and they ask me some questions about what I'm doing. And so one of my kids that's involved in the big gaming group that comes over to my house, he was asking me some questions, and I said, well, okay, well, send me your routine. Let me see what you're doing, so that way I can kind of get an idea of what you're working with. So earlier in the show, I was talking about superset training. And so the superset is not my idea in the least bit. It was first introduced to me through Joe Manganiello's book, Evolution. And when I read his ideas, I was like, this sounds like something that I would be extremely interested in. I incorporated it early, you know, into my lifting career, and I've been using it ever since. So essentially what supersets are, it's a series of exercises. Typically, they're paired. And mm-hmm. I like to do what's known as antagonistic training. So the human body is an absolutely fantastic thing. And one of the things that we're trying to do is properly with bodybuilding is to develop all of our muscles in equal symmetry. So you want to get that good back and forth motion with, and so you can see, like for every push that you do with, say, like a bench press, I pair that with either a machine row or a seated cable row or maybe a bent over dumbbell row, you know, just something so that way I'm getting that good back and forth. So for every push that I do, I also go through and I do a pull. So that way I'm getting that full range of motion. And so I didn't know until I started to go in and do the research for it that what that technically is called is a superset. Again, it's not my idea, it's been around, but that was the terminology that was used. And so when I go through and I'm developing my different ideas, the general idea of it is, as long as I'm going through, so if I go through and I change my, if I train my chest, then I go through and without resting, I immediately go and start training my back. So then my chest is allowed to rest while I still continue to work. So that way my heart rate continues to stay elevated. So that way I can burn more fat. This is my way of doing HIIT, or I guess they call it HIIT training, where you're doing high intensity interval training. So I hate doing HIIT training on the treadmill, where you're going really fast and then you walk it back and you go really fast, you walk it back. I'm not a big fan of that, so I try to do my HIITs whenever I'm doing my superset training. So it's a big burst of energy, and so you're doing that for your chest, then you're doing it for your back, and then you're resting for as little time as you can. So for like a minute, and then you're going through, and then you wash, rinse, and repeat. So this has been part of my whole lifting strategy, you know, practically from the beginning, because I came across that book fairly early in my research. And so again, going back to, you know, wanting to be flexible, I've been reading a lot of information about how a lot of people are not doing as much bench press as they used to. Bench presses, they'll say, oh, that's for offensive linemen. You know, it's and so there are other people that have found what they feel to be superior with doing things like, you know, cable flies or spin presses or, you know, things of that nature. But that's not to say that they're not training their chest. They're just finding different ways to work at it. And so, like, one of the items that we have, we've got two different varieties. We've got one where you go through, it's a different, three technically. So it's a seated dip machine, I think would be the term for it. It's where you're up in a tall position, and you can almost imagine it like, so you're pressing the weight down towards your hips, which is, it's going through and working those chest muscles. So they have two different varieties. One is where you go through and you load the plates all up on them. The other one is where they've got the weights in a stack and you go through, you put the different pin in, or then you can go through and they have the really tall ones where you can do either, you know, dips or pull-ups, but you have some counterbalance weight on there. So you can go through and work your chest. And so as I'm going through and I'm developing this, I'm like, okay, well, so really, since I'm doing this push down motion, really I need to partner that with like a lat pull down. So that way I'm getting that nice, you know, up and down motion. So I go through and I try to develop as much of these supersets as possible, so that way I'm keeping my heart rate elevated. And so my kid comes to me and he shows me his exercises that he's doing. And as it turns out, what he's doing is what's called compound set training. So it's the same principle. You're moving from one exercise to a second exercise with no rest in between. But the difference is that you're working the same muscle set with both, or you're working the same muscle group with both exercises within your own compound set. So like, for instance, one of the things we've talked about here is that, you know, the difference between lifting with a dumbbell and then lifting with a resistance band. So if you go through and imagine you're going to do your dumbbell curls, so you do your dumbbell curls and you're doing those with your dumbbells. And then as soon as you're done, you drop those down and then you're grabbing that resistance band, which targets those muscles in a different way.
In a different way.
And you're working those. Yeah. So you're working those back to back. So, I wanted to go through and see, okay, so this is what this young man is doing. So let's go through and let's study his exercise routine. Let's see what he's doing and let's see if that compound set might be the superior way to do it. And so as I'm going through and I'm doing research on these compound sets, that's where I go through and I find that there's even greater levels of this, which is where you do tri-set training. So again, it's the same philosophy as the compound exercise, but you're doing it with three exercises. And then you have giant set training, which is, again, same philosophy as the compound sets, but this time it's with four exercises. So, and me being me, probably not the smartest move that I've ever made. Okay, so like I go through and I watch a lot of YouTube videos to see how different people are going through and they're setting up the different programs. There's an absolutely fabulous one with a WWE wrestler named Sheamus. And so Sheamus has this Brave Change program where he's going through and he's braving change. So he's going to all these different wrestlers that he works with, and then he's running through their routines with him. Now, this is a professional athlete, top of the line, strong, you know, just he knows his way around a gym. And then you see him go and work with these other people, and they're pushing him out of his comfort zone. They're making him do things that they do normally that he's never done before. And so as a result, you see him winded and tired, and he's complaining about how hard it is. But, you know, so it's like, so wait a minute. He's going in and doing this brand new stuff, and it's kicking his butt. So I should have, you know, so I know this and I should have had it in the back of my head. So I go, all right, so I'm going to study this compound training. I'm going to see how this does. But I'm a big, strong guy. I know what I'm doing. So I'm going to start with a tri-set and let's just see how all this works. And my arms were fried by the time I got to the end of it. If I would have been smart, if I would have been thinking, I said, okay, on this week, let's do the compound set. Next week, we'll try to move to tri-sets. And then the week after that, we'll try to move to giant set. But instead, I was like, oh, let's run before we can walk. And I tried to do it. And as a result, it's one of those things where I think I would do it every now and again, but I don't think it's, for me personally, I didn't feel it was a superior method, only because your muscles get, which, and now I will say, if you're looking to target a muscle group that maybe you feel is lagging behind, that isn't getting the amount of attention that it needs, this is a wonderful system to put into your repertoire because it is going to build those muscles like crazy. But so what I would found is that as I would do my first set, everything would be good. And then to get into that second one, man, it was like, just the tank would run out of gas. And I didn't feel like I was getting the full amount of lifting potential that I could have by using the antagonistic sets. So I don't know if you've used compound set training in the past and what your opinions are on it.
I've used compound sets on and off, and I like them. I don't like resting between sets. So I'll usually switch and do something else, you know, like I'll do my biceps, then my triceps, then I'll automatically go to my chest and my back. Yeah, so I do that occasionally during my workouts. And yeah, it does take a lot out of you, and you feel a better pump and fatigue when you do that. But I like switching what I do. I don't like staying with anything for very long because, again, you get bored, and then you your mind isn't on what you're doing. And so I like to mix it up a bit. I've looked through my old bodybuilding books, too, and found things like positions of flexion and other really obscure techniques that I haven't played with in a while. And before I took my break, I was planning on incorporating them. Now I'll incorporate them when I go back to exercising again. But I like all of those techniques, and all of them have something to offer. Even dynamic tension, the old Charles Atlas routine, I found that
right.
When you're just basically, if you know what it feels like to lift weights, you can get your body to tense, and you can feel the strain of lifting weights. And when you get really good, you can do it with your mind. So you could be lying there meditating, and you could give yourself a full workout in your mind where your muscles themselves get pitted against each other, and you're not moving hardly at all.
I see. Okay. But it's in going through it and figuring out all these different ways that people have, you brought up a really great point. And I think that that's something that we can easily, it's a negative that we can fall into. That you have to be really present. You have to be really mindful of, and that's not letting your mind wander. It's to go
right.
through, and because then I feel like when you're doing that, then you just kind of end up going through the motions. Whereas if you're finding these new techniques to use, you can go through and really, I mean, I know it sounds strange, but there are times I try to equate it almost like a flashlight. So you got this light that's all on you, and you need to go through and twist that flashlight to narrow that beam to really get it to focus in on the muscle group that you're targeting. And so if you imagine it like that, and the smaller that beam of light is going to get, the more intense that light is also going to become. So as a result, when you start mentally putting your energy into that muscle and you're really focusing on it, I think that's when you get that maximum amount of flex whenever you're going through and lifting that weight, if you're actually thinking about the muscles that you're lifting. And so that's one of the techniques that I try to use, especially whenever I come out of a set, is where I'll go through and physically just touch the muscles that I've just worked
right.
out, just to make that mind-body connection going, hey, this is what we were just working on, and I want my body to know that. So in going through and studying, the giant set trainings and the tricep trainings, which I'm going to try to incorporate as I slowly start to come back, that's where I was finding a variety of different techniques that I'm looking forward to implementing. There was one that they had that was called, it's called a Newbret Pro Set Method. And so this, it seems like it's something that would work for me because I'm constantly trying to limit my rest. And with this Pro Set Method, it's basically you go through and you design a workout. And so in week one, say you did three sets of this muscle group, and it's within a specific time. So then in week two, you have to do four sets of the same exercise. And the only way that you can do that is by limiting your rest. And so, and then by the time you get into week three, you're trying to do five sets in the time that originally it took you to do three. And so you're just going through, you're constantly trying to keep your heart rate going. And so then there was the idea of the century sets. And this is where you're literally doing 100 reps, which I've experimented with this, not with the century. I've done reps of 50, and 50 is extremely difficult to do. So a century sets, you're only doing anywhere from 20 to 30% of the weight that you would do for 10 reps. So for instance, if you're doing a dumbbell curl and you can curl 50 pounds 10 times, then you're going to drop all the way down to doing 10 and 15 pound dumbbells in order to be able to get to 100. And this, it's really more of a mental game because whenever you first get started, you're like, oh, okay, this isn't any big deal. But once you start to get into those deep reps, it really becomes more of a mental focus. And obviously you're only doing like one set per muscle group whenever you're doing these. But so the benefit of doing these sensory sets, so one of the things that they talk about is the different way that our muscle fibers are put together. So there's what's called the fast twitch muscle fibers and the slow twitch muscle fibers. So it's basically the white meat and the dark meat. And so slow twitch are our endurance muscles. So that's where you go through. And so if you start doing these sensory sets, the slow twitch muscles are what's going to be the focus because this is an endurance exercise. And so, and then the fast twitch muscle fibers, those are for more explosive types of movements. And so I would say, you know, most of your muscle groups, it's about a 50-50 split between the fast twitch and the slow twitch. So when you start, you're using all these slow twitch muscle fibers until you get to around, you know, rep 60. And so by going through and doing that, the research is saying that's where you have to incorporate the fast twitch in order to get those last reps. And so this leads to the bigger growth of the blood vessels. The blood vessels are what's bringing all the nutrients and the blood into those muscles, which is going to make them bigger and stronger. So it's going through and incorporating, you know, ideas like this, finding new ways to keep yourself motivated. And so much like you, how you were on the downtime, whenever I was on the downtime because of my surgery, I started going through and doing more research mentally just so that way I could, you know, figure out, okay, what's going to be my plan moving forward. So that way I'm constantly thinking about what's the best way to improve as we start to get back into this real heavy.
Yeah, that's very important. I found that one thing I did for a while, and I found there a great benefit until, again, my mind started to wander, is let's say I had an arm day. I would do finger strength, grip, wrist, forearms, and do one exercise after another, you know, just move down the list and until I couldn't do anymore. And then I would give myself a brief rest till my hands recovered enough to proceed. And then I would do bicep, tricep, and then whole arm, things like Zottmans and hammer curls.
Yeah.
And there's only a few sets you can do until you can't do any more of those either. But I would just keep going. And I used your system of the light to heavy pyramid that you talked about that I really liked and used for quite a while. And I found that in a shorter amount of time than it would normally take me to do my arms were pumped and I was exhausted. So I got a lot out of the workout by combining different elements together and doing that. And then I started doing them for my legs, too. I would do calf raises, which also involve your toes, you know, if you're moving your calves up and down. Then I would do leg lifts, and I would do leg curls, and I would do leg extensions, and then I would do with dumbbells squats, and I have like a calf device. I would do calves, so I would do the same thing that I did with my arms with my legs, and do the lower legs first, and then the upper legs. So and so on, and then I did back and chest. I came up with a whole routine where again it's different exercises, but one after the other. Until you just can't move in there.
I'm curious that in listening to your design, I wonder, is it which is the superior method, to start with the toes and then work up to the thighs, or to work to the thighs and then move down to the toes?
I've always experimented, and I don't know. I just do whatever comes into my mind. But I just separate them into those pieces. And sometimes I'll start with the calves and the toes because they're easier, you know, so it warms me up. And then I'll do the more difficult exercises. After that, sometimes because I want to be like refreshed and revitalized in the beginning, do the hardest stuff first and then cool off with the other ones.
Right. Yeah. And the reason why I ask that is because what I've been told, and without going through and doing studying and doing the research for it myself, is that forearms are typically one of the last things that you train, because once the forearms are fried, that's it, you're done, you know, because you're going to find it more difficult to carry the weights and things like that.
Right.
So sometimes forearms are the best last thing to try. But no, I'm curious about the techniques that you're using. I'm going to try to implement that into my system as well.
May it serve you as it served me. I'm going to start with those again, too. I'm going to ease into working out later this week. I'm going to start initially with no weight or little weight. You know, I might do like 5 pounds and also 5 pound wrist weights. And then just keep every workout, just keep increasing until I reach my my range. And I found, like you, too, that the muscles remember. So once you get into it, what we had before comes back relatively quickly. It's getting it there in the first place that's hard, like you pointed out.
And right, and so it's kind of...
We have like 4 minutes. I'll let you finish your thought and then share, please, with people how they can get in contact with you. And you have great stuff on your Fury and Strength site as well.
Well, thank you. Just the point that I was going to make is that given the amount of soreness that I have with me right now, I wish you the best of luck, and it's kind of one of those things. I wouldn't try to sprint before you can walk, just
right,
because the pain that I'm feeling with it right now. But it's a good feeling, and so it's kind of one of those things. Now I'm feeling even more motivation because I feel like it's less work to stay on top of the mountain than it is to have to go through and climb all over again. And so it's kind of one of those things where I'm a big believer in volume training, and so I'm looking forward to getting back to that level that I was at before. But again, I'm sorry that, boy, yeah, the hour really did just get away from us here. But I thought this was one of our better interviews,
yeah,
that we've had here. So I'm horrible at self-promotion. The way that you promote me through your website or through the Facebook page, that's the absolute best way for people to get in contact with me.
I'm greatly honored. And we have a couple of minutes left. Again, for people who do feel discouraged, because it is discouraging to see your mass slowly start to vanish right before your eyes, if you need to take some time off, what would you suggest to these people to basically give them back the spark of motivation and to persevere until their muscles do come back?
I think as you start to go through there, you're going to start, once you go through and you start working out again, what I've noticed in the short amount of time that I've been back, it's I'm chasing that endorphin rush that I love so much. And while I know it is a bit of a cliche thing of no pain, no gain, it is the truth. You start to go through and you start working out and your brain will emit these endorphins to mitigate that pain. And that is such a wonderful feeling. I think once you start to get in, even though it's tough to drag yourself out of bed, I found that if you go through and even if you put in a light workout is better than nothing. Even if it takes you 20 minutes to a mile, you're still lapping everyone that's on the couch. And sometimes you go there with no motivation, but just by getting there and making that mental contact with the iron, you might do more than you thought you would have. But if you stay in bed, you can't do anything. So even a bad workout is better than no workout. And then slowly you'll start to adapt and start to adjust, and then you'll start to find that spark again. At least that's what's happened for me. So if they are going through something like that, I hope that they find that same level of passion that I have.
Thank you so very much, Ryan. You're awesome, and I always enjoy our conversations. I'm looking forward to our next one already. Thanks to everybody at home for tuning in, whether you called the number, clicked on a link, or whether you'll be checking us out later on demand. Until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures in the little time we have left. Let's see, we will play Golden Bat.
of her cries, lady of my